Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 173. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
It's kind of a slow movie week. I have nothing new. Is there anything you want to talk about before we get into what we're going to do here? Because I think, like, you think people should check out, or?
I did see the big movie of the week. I saw Crazy Rich Asians.
Okay.
It's kind of your standard romantic comedy.
Yeah.
I liked it. It's decent. I don't think it doesn't do anything really all that amazingly different for the genre. Like, it's pretty standard fare.
Yeah.
But it's a decent good time. Awkwafina, who plays the main character, Rachel, her best friend. She's fucking hysterical in it every time she shows up in the movie. She gets actual laughs out of, like, I mean, sometimes you get, like, a chuckle here and there by, like, some of the events, but she's actually really, really funny in the movie. Drawn a blank on the Ken Jeong plays her dad, Awkwafina's dad, and he's fucking hysterical. In fact, he calls her Asian Ellen at one point. and they just have this crazy, like, relationship. Rachel, who's played by Constance Wu, and Nick, who's played by Henry Golding, it's your typical love story, where, like, the parents aren't really approving of the woman in the picture here. It's super huge opulence in Singapore. Yeah. So it's fucking pretty standard shit, but it's funny because the performances they get out of this cast is pretty good. But it's nothing like, oh my God, that is so fucking amazing.
Yeah.
It's just, like, it's a pretty good romantic comedy.
All right.
That is notable because it is, like, 99% Asian actors.
Yeah, and behind the camera too, right? Like, the people I made.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm happy it did well, too, I heard.
Yeah, it did decent.
I just, for whatever reason, I had no interest. It's not, and I like romantic comedies, but, like, I don't think I've seen a trailer for this movie. Like, I don't know, I somehow missed any trailers or anything. So, like, was it really, I was aware of it, and I wanted it to do well, but at the same time, I had no real, like, nothing driving me to the theater to go see it. So, but I'll probably check it out when it comes out on video.
It did well. It kind of proves that, hey, you can tell one of these stories without it having to be pretty white people. Like,
yeah.
I mean, not to say that these aren't pretty people, but they're pretty Asian people. Like, you can do, these stories are universal. They are relatable from every angle. It doesn't matter whether you're white, black, Asian.
Yeah.
Romantic comedies are romantic comedies, and this is a decent one of those. So.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes it does help to have something that separates it from the pack. I think last year, The Big Sick was one of the best movies of the year.
Yeah.
And that was a romantic comedy. Like, Kumail kind of proved last year, hey, you know, I'm not white, and you guys are going to love this shit. And we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll get around to seeing it eventually. What verdict are you falling on it?
It's a very strong 3.
All right. So I didn't really see anything new per se. I watched a bunch of TV, and there wasn't much else besides Crazy Rich Asians. Like, Crazy, I can't even speak tonight. Other than that coming out, so I decided, Chris, that we're going to take a trip back to the 90s for this episode.
Yeah.
And do, like, a top 10, you know, like, our top 10 films of the 90s. It's funny, like when I brought it up to you, I thought that that, you know, for whatever, like when I think of the 90s, I think of like that post Scream era of horror movies. Mm-hmm. And that was a pretty bad time, I think, for horror. And they all felt like these like glossy Dawson's Creek episodes, almost like.
Yeah.
That's like when I think of 90s film, that's kind of what I think. And so I thought like this would be a list of like gems, like, hey, you know what, some movies from the 90s are actually good. But what I quickly discovered when I went to go put my list together and I'm, you know, Googling movies from the 90s is that that was a pretty, like, it's a decade that had some great films, and I think it is a decade that had some of my favorite films of all time. It's crazy because I usually think of the 80s like that.
Sure.
Like I prefer the whole 80s aesthetic, like the synth scores, you know, just shit like that. But no, the 90s were pretty fucking good, and I at one point had over 30 movies that I was considering for my top 10. So it was hard for me to whittle it down. And then I didn't want my list to look like every other list of top 10 90s films. So I left some like big obvious ones off.
Okay.
Which might sound weird because we're sitting here trying to do, hey, these are what we think are the best films of the 90s. And, you know, spoilers, nowhere on my list is Goodfellas. I just feel like, again, like I said, like, you know, maybe you'll cover some of the ones that I skipped. We did not consult each other on our lists. And then, you know, yeah, just if somehow we don't, both of us don't include one of these big ones, oh well, you know, for one, lots of people have talked about these movies before. Two, there was a lot of good movies, you know. And so, like, my thinking was, you know, everything I have on my top 10 list is something I really love. But, you know, some of them, I think I chose more because I wanted to highlight them and they weren't talked so much about. Other stuff is stuff I think that has aged better with time than some of the stuff that I thought was amazing back then. But, I will run down, you know, my honorable mentions after we get through our top 10. Did you have any thoughts about how you came to put your list together? Or
yeah. So I very quickly gave up trying to like make a ranked list, and I did kind of approach it in the same way you did, where it's like, well, like if we are going by like these are the best films ever made, like that list is going to be maybe a little bit different than like what are my.
Yeah, it's kind of like, this is what my favorites are this week kind of deal. It's
like, yeah.
As like, I sat down this week to think about it, like, what movies do I kind of hold close to my heart? But, man, it was tough.
But also, like I can state that, hey, you know, Pulp Fiction is a fucking awesome movie.
Yeah.
But, and if I'm talking about, like, film craft and you know, like that, it's going to show up on that type of list. But in terms of films like that I sit down and watch, like, or would sit down and watch often, yeah, like it's not one that often comes up. Like I appreciate it. I think it's a fucking phenomenal movie, but
mm-hmm.
like it's just not a movie from the 90s that I'd be like, yes, this is something that I'm going to watch. So I kind of came up with like movies that I more feel are like my favorites and, you know, where I would kind of fall on watching them.
That's kind of what I was trying to say as well. Like, you know, these are kind of like, you know, same thing. Like I would say Pulp Fiction is amazing, but guess what? There's other movies. There's other Tarantino movies from the 90s I would watch first.
Right.
So, like, don't get angry at our list. Like, I think, you know, I've got some weird choices on my mind. I got some, like, you know, I'll be honest, though, when I get near the top of this list here, at least for me, I did rank them. And, like, the top three, I think, are pretty rock solid in terms of, like, I'm serious about it. Like if even if you threw in movies like Pulp Fiction and Goodfellas, I think my top three I love even more. So
okay.
But yeah, you know, without further ado, let's just fucking let's get into it. Let's travel back to the 90s, Chris. I know you said you didn't rank it, but just so I can keep it straight in my head.
Yeah.
What is your number 10?
All right, my number 10, and where I have them in the order of kind of year they came out. So okay. I'm starting out at 1991, and it's Oliver Stone's JFK.
All right.
It's probably like when you see the rest of the films on this, like it's kind of one that maybe stands out as weird. Of a choice, but it's one that kind of got me interested in the whole JFK assassination. You know, it came out just as I was like leaving grade school, going into high school, and that kind of the whole JFK assassination kind of like I was obsessed with during my high school years. Did numerous reports, and the film was just. You know, it's mostly a procedural.
Yeah.
But I think it's wonderfully done. It's one of Kevin Costner's best films, I think. And maybe one of Oliver Stone's best films as well.
I would agree with that.
Like it's, and certainly when you look at his more recent work.
Yeah. Yeah. But, even amongst his greats though, like that era.
Yeah.
I put JFK pretty high up there, honestly, for me.
Yeah. Too. I think it's a really great movie, and yeah, so that slipped in here as well.
Yeah, I really like that movie. It's been so long, but you know, I'll just do comments. I do remember, like, just it has like a crazy large cast, like
mm-hmm.
like basically anybody who was anybody is in that fucking movie, and just interesting. Like, it was like one of the first times that you were like. Look at like Kevin Bacon and be like, man, that dude could fucking act, right?
Yeah.
And I do remember like a huge chunk of it was like kind of like a courtroom scene, like a big part of the movie, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you're right.
And then it's kind of like the most riveting part of the film, at least that's how I remember it. It's funny, over the years, people have pointed out, oh, it's not factually accurate, and Oliver Stone's like, bit of a nutcase and blah 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 blah, and I go back to I remember what Ebert said about it is it's not about the facts of the JFK case, that it's a film about how we feel about what happened.
Yeah.
I just thought that was always an interesting observation by Ebert.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna start off my list also very early in the 90s, not on purpose, but my number 10 film, and I don't know if you've seen this. This is not one that everybody's seen. It is Pump Up the Volume from 1990. It is written and directed by Alan Moyle, who would go on to do Empire Records and not much else.
Okay. I have seen Empire Records.
I have never seen Empire Records. and I know that's one you like really like, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So before that, this director did this, and he wrote it. It was actually like a novel, I guess, that he wrote that never got published, and he turned it into this movie. It stars Christian Slater at the height of his popularity as like this high school kid who's like shy and a loner. But at night, he does like a pirate radio station from his house where he plays like punk rock and, you know, like pretty cool music and stuff. But also goes on these like diatribes about, you know, life in the suburb where he's living and you know, what it's like at the high school that he goes to. And he becomes like a huge hit with like, you know, like kids all over this fucking town will, like, get together and listen to his radio show. And it like stirs up kind of unrest in the school because he's pushing against authority and riling kids up, basically.
Right.
Anyways, have you ever seen Pump Up the Volume?
I have not.
It is, I think, a really great high school film. It is a movie, and, you know, the reason I put this one on the list is because it was like a formative movie for me when I was a kid. When I saw it, like, I identified very strongly with Christian Slater's character, and I wanted to be like one of those provocateurs. Like, I wanted to, you know, that's part of what pushed me into writing and being politically active was this movie. And the movie doesn't have like a specific political bent. It's more just like, be involved, you know, like, I mean, it's an anti-authority type message to it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, you know, it's kind of about, you know, the oppressive authorities at their school and stuff and how they're making kids' lives miserable and him creating this station that inspires kids to like stand up for themselves. I really enjoyed the movie. I have not seen it in a while. Like, it's been a while. It has not gotten a Blu-ray release, but if you can find a way to watch it, I think it's a fantastic high school movie. So that's why it's on my list.
Gonna add it to my to watch list for sure.
Yeah, I think you'd like it. What is your next one, Chris? Your number nine, we'll call it.
My number nine here, also from 1991, and I think if we were talking favorite movies in general, this one possibly shows up, but it's Disney's Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
The animated Beauty and the Beast movie. I mean, there's not really a whole lot to say. I just think it's a beautiful, like, animated movie in terms of that. I think it's the peak of their work, of their kind of revival.
Yeah,
the late 80s and through early 90s. And it's a great movie through and through. It's also the movie that kind of created the category at the Oscars for Best Animated Picture, because Beauty and the Beast was nominated for Best Picture. It did not win. And since then, I don't believe any animated film has ever been up for Best Picture since then, because they created Best Animated Picture. So,
do you recall or do you know what won Best Picture, like when it was up against it?
I do not.
Okay. It's funny because I'm kind of like you with this. One, I think that's my favorite era of Disney. Like, you know, that kind of like, you know, starting with The Little Mermaid, I think, and then kind of continuing through like the early 90s like that.
Yeah.
And like you, I don't know what it is. I think it's just perfectly made and great music in it. Like, it's my favorite out of those. Like, a lot of people will go to The Lion King. Like, that's their favorite.
Yeah, sure.
For whatever reason, and I do need to watch The Lion King again. Like, I never was into it when I was a kid. I really preferred Aladdin, and then more than Aladdin, this. Like, this was always my favorite. And it's funny because, like, Beauty and the Beast is such a, like, traditional, like, kind of love story that, you know, I think it's geared more towards girls. But I just think it's a fantastic animated movie. So it did not end up on my list or even my honorable mentions. But, I mean, yeah, that's a great movie and it's a great pick.
The Silence of the Lambs ended up winning Best Picture in 1992.
Okay.
It was on the list with Beauty and the Beast, Bugsy, JFK, and The Prince of Tides.
That's interesting. I'm totally happy with the fact that Silence of the Lambs won
be upset about that.
But, like, if I'm being honest, out of that list, I think I'd say Beauty and the Beast is the right. Like, it has stood the test of time more than those, even.
Yep.
Hindsight's 2020.
Yeah.
What
you gonna do?
All right, Chris. My number nine is Scream.
Okay.
And it doesn't really need much of an introduction, I'm sure, for anyone who's listening to this. But fuck it. You know, Scream came along at a time, like, I think the 90s were, if there was, like I said at the top of this, like, if there was one weak thing for sure about the 90s, it was kind of the horror genre.
Mm-hmm.
And Scream came around at a time where, like, the slasher films, especially, had been in almost a decade-long, slump. Like, you think about, like, the early 80s kind of ushered in the era of slashers that, like, I don't know, those are, like, the movies I grew up with. And that was, like, the craze in the 80s. And, like, I think it kind of peaks with, like, I don't know, Nightmare on Elm Street 4 or something. That's like the most 80s as fuck slasher movie.
Right.
But then it's like after that, in the early 90s, it seemed like horror didn't know what to do. And it sure as hell didn't really know what to do with the slasher genre. And then comes along Scream. It kind of revitalizes the genre and revitalizes Wes Craven's career, kind of.
Yeah.
It just kind of like came out of nowhere. And it's, you know, I think it fucked up the genre for the latter half of that decade.
It may have, because then it wasn't chasing the slasher genre. It was then chasing kind of the self-aware horror knockoffs of Scream. Like, you know, we got I Know What You Did Last Summer, and it got bad.
Urban Legend.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, maybe it's just because I've been thinking about the 90s. I kind of want to go back and watch some of those post-Scream horror movies. Like, especially The Faculty. I want to see that again.
They're probably fun to watch.
Yeah,
but I remember at the time, like, ooh, these are basically chasing Scream. Like,
and Scream wasn't really chasing anything. Scream was like a trailblazer in a way.
Yeah.
And it was a film about the genre that was also a really good example of the genre. I think that the opening of that film is fantastic and scary and bloody and gory. And I think that the reveal at the end, the twist, when you find out who the killers are, it was really great. Like, it really was a great surprise at the end of that movie, I thought. And then I think that the whole, like, sequence, like, from when you know who the killers are to the end of the movie is really exciting and rivals kind of Halloween for how good it is. And just, despite, you know, whatever qualms I have about what it did to the genre afterwards, it did revitalize the genre. And it was a huge deal for me when I was, like, I think, like, a freshman in high school going to see this movie. I went to see it probably at least 2-3 times in the theater. And I just loved it. Lots of nice nods to Halloween, too, in it.
Yeah, there's some great shots that are definitely callbacks to Halloween. And
You have the movie playing on the TV through the whole party at the end. So, like, there's parts where it's, like, scary in Scream, and you're, like, you hear the Halloween theme, it's like, fuck yeah. I don't know if you wanted to say anything more about Scream, but I mean, that's pretty much why it lands on my list.
Yeah, it's an excellent horror film. So where are we at? 8?
Yep.
So my 8 is from 1992. We've discussed many times over the 170 plus episodes we've done that I'm a fan of Tom Cruise. This is still, I think, one of his best, and it's A Few Good Men. Oddly, another courtroom drama here, but I think Cruise and Demi Moore are great in what is basically like a procedural courtroom drama.
Yeah,
and it has phenomenal performances all the way around. It's gripping. It's a great kind of. It pulls you through the case, in a way that kind of, for me, was like, yes, I like this shit. And it stuck with me. Like, it's still something that I kind of will get pulled into. Like, a good court case drama is it came from me kind of falling for A Few Good Men. So,
Kind of got you into that genre.
Yeah.
Um, I have not seen that movie in probably 20 years, but I loved it and agree with you. Yeah, it's a riveting movie. Like, I love when you get like a good courtroom drama, like how riveting the courtroom shit could be in it. And that's, yeah, you know, that's a perfect example of that. I mean, that has a scene that everyone kind of quotes and shit still.
Oh, yeah. It, so. And I don't even know if that's something you can actually do in court, like the way he basically baits them to have that outburst. But it's just riveting cinema.
It works as drama for sure.
Yeah.
My number eight is much lighter fare, and it's another high school movie called Dazed and Confused from 1993. Written by Richard Linklater. Another formative movie for me. I think I mentioned this probably before on a show. It was like the movie that made me want to smoke pot when I was like 12 years old.
Okay.
I was like, oh my God, high school is going to be so cool, so amazing. So it definitely steered my life down a certain path. But, you know, looking back at it now, and I think even then I kind of recognize it's not just a goofy stoner comedy. This is like an art house film, kind of. Like, it feels like both things in a way, because it's like entertaining and it's light and it's breezy, but it's also just very artfully done. It very smartly does not have a plot, really. Like, it's just like there's little threads. Like, there's kind of a main character whose name is Mitch, and he's like in eighth grade, and it, you know, he's like going into high school and, you know, trying to fit in. Like, that's kind of like the one big thing. There's like another thread about how these high school jocks, their coach wants them to sign like this fucking, like, we won't do drugs thing. Like, that's basically it for plot. But it's just, you get to spend time with these kids on the last day of school in 1976. I don't know, but I'm assuming it really captures that era. It has a huge cast of people who would go on to be famous, including, you know, Ben Affleck. It's a movie I've seen probably fucking 50 times. Like, it was one of those ones, like, you just watched over and over and over. But, you know, even when I watch it now, I really appreciate that movie. So that's my number eight, Chris.
Yeah, looking at that cast, it's fucking amazing. Like,
it's my favorite Linklater film too. I think, I'm trying to think if there's one that I like more. No,
Affleck, McGonaghy, Parker Posey, Renee Zellweger, like,
yeah,
wow.
You know, and then there were some people that were kind of like bigger at the time and died off, like Jason Mundin, I think, was in it.
Yeah, Mila Jovovich.
Yeah,
Cole Hauser. Like,
just an awesome cast. It's just an awesome movie. It has aged. Like, it doesn't. It feels like it could have came out today. If you have not seen Dazed and Confused, I'd be surprised, but check it out. What, Chris, is your number seven?
Number seven comes from 1993, and it is Steven Spielberg's dinosaur epic Jurassic Park. It's, you know, at the time it was just kind of amazing cinema to walk into a theater and see dinosaurs alive on screen, like,
yeah,
looking like what you imagine them to be,
like, just from a technical aspect. Yeah, that was the big thing, but also pretty fantastic adventure movie, right?
Yeah, it works as a great adventure movie too. And it kind of captures everything that Spielberg does good. Like, I mean, Spielberg is a phenomenal director outside of the adventure genre, but when he sits down and just does like an adventure movie, he fires on all cylinders. And this is one of his best, I think. It's up there with like E.T. and the Indiana Jones movies, and it still works, I think, mostly because like Sam Neill and Laura Dern and Jeff Goldblum sell everything that's happening.
Yeah,
and And it's, yes, like, maybe the dinosaurs are a little, like, they don't look phenomenal today, but they actually still look better than a lot of,
like, CGI that came after.
Yeah, that has come after that. So it's like, you know what, this is a movie I can sit down and watch at any point in time. And actually, if it happens to be on TV, it's one that I will sit there and watch. So
that is one that I think if you polled people who grew up around the time we did, like in our age range, I think most of their lists would have it. Me, as you know, I'm a weird one. I didn't like it when I was a kid. And it's kind of hard for me to, like, I'm sure if I watched it again recently, like, I would say the things that you say about, like, it like, based on memory, it is a great showcase for what Spielberg does best. You know? I should give it another go. Anyways, my number 7 has a slightly smaller budget than Jurassic Park. And that is the... What year is it? 1996 film Swingers.
Okay.
Written by Jon Favreau and directed by Doug Liman. This is, it's kind of like Jon Favreau's trying to make it in Hollywood script that got made and did exactly what, you know, he wanted it to do. And it's a film about people trying to make it in Hollywood in a way. But also just kind of a, it's not like a romantic comedy. I don't know how you, like what the correct word, you know, maybe I'm missing the correct word for this, but it's like, it's about single guys and specifically Jon Favreau as the main character, getting over a breakup with his girlfriend. And he's living in LA and trying to make it as an actor. And I have to imagine it captures that world pretty well, you know, considering that Jon Favreau knows a thing or two about that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, it was like Entourage before fucking Entourage, and a lot better than Entourage. And, you know, and this is kind of like the first time you notice a lot of these actors. Like, they had been in stuff before. Like, Jon Favreau had been in Rudy before this, but, you know, this was him doing his own thing. So you have him, you have a very young Vince Vaughn in this. Young Ron Livingston, young Heather Graham, and it's just a really fun, low-budget comedy, like guy comedy. It's a movie that has amazing dialogue by Favreau, and, you know, maybe the first time you watch it, you think it's okay or whatever, but it's a movie that the more you rewatch it, the more you'll just remember every fucking line and quote the movie for the rest of your life. And just some really classic scenes, like the scene where they're all playing, I think they're playing NHL 94, and talking about how you used to be able to make Wayne Gretzky's head bleed and all that. It's just a fun movie. You know, and it's just like fun to see like unhinged young Vince Vaughn here just act like a fucking asshole.
And he does asshole real well.
Yeah. Like, this is peak fucking Vince Vaughn. It's like I still will watch this movie every couple of years and just totally fucking love it. And the last time I watched it, it made me realize how old I am, though, because like, these fuckers in this movie are still using like landline phones through the whole goddamn thing. It's like, god damn. It's like, you know, there's a huge bit in the film about an answering machine message that he fucks up. And it's just like, that almost couldn't, I mean, you could do it today with voicemail, but it just feels ancient. But very, I don't know. It's a movie that I love. And so that's why I felt I had to have it on there.
Nice.
So I think that brings us to our number 6.
Yes. So when I originally put this down, I had Terminator 2 Judgment Day, okay, which I think is a film that belongs on a list like this.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought more about it, and I actually enjoy James Cameron's 1994 film True Lies a little bit more. It's a completely different type of movie. It's more of, you know, like an action, big blowout kind of action movie, but there's a ton of comedy in it. It almost knows that it's absurd, but it has that James Cameron feel of being able to blow everything out with what he does. And his action set pieces are, you know, wonderful. And there's some fucking absurd shit going on, though, like where Schwarzenegger is on a fucking horse. And it's Jamie Lee Curtis is fucking phenomenal in it. She's smoking hot throughout the whole movie. Tom Arnold as Arnold's partner is hysterical.
He's funny in it.
He's really. I really love watching this movie. I think maybe the ending does not hold up quite as well because I seem to remember that it was very CG heavy because it involved like a jet that Arnold jumps onto.
And he didn't Tom Cruise it.
It's certainly not Tom Cruise. This is a movie that like I will sit there and watch every single time it's on. It's one of my favorite James Cameron movies. So
it's a movie that I loved at the time. I have not seen it in fucking forever. I would love to see it again. It is unavailable on Blu-ray or possibly DVD. I know it's one of those ones that has not gotten a release in a really long time.
It's such a shame because
it doesn't make sense. I mean, James Cameron is a huge director, and this was a popular film.
Yeah, it was a
huge hit.
Huge hit, and like, I mean, it's one of Schwarzenegger's biggest movies. Like,
I don't understand that. I understand. Yeah, I probably, you know, you release it now on Blu-ray, it's not going to sell like Terminator, but I think it would sell. I would buy it. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I actually just watched this like half hour thing about it the other day. I'll throw out a little plug for someone I discovered on YouTube. It's a YouTube channel by this guy named Oliver Harper. And I think that's the name of the channel. And he just does like half hour reviews of fucking classic movies. And this is one of them. And when I say classic, basically everything that we watched growing up, he's done a half hour
video
on. Yeah. My number six is American Beauty from 1999, directed by Sam Mendes. I believe that's how you say it. And written by Alan Ball, who would go on to create 6 Feet Under, the show on HBO. And starring Kevin Spacey, who would go on to live in infamy.
Yes.
And it's funny because if you like tell someone what this movie is about, especially in this day and age, they would probably be like, that's fucking gross. Why would you want to watch that? It's about a guy going through a midlife crisis who wants to fuck his daughter's friend, like cheerleading friend.
Yeah.
That's like what, like on a surface level, that's what American Beauty is about. And if you tell someone that, they're like, that's fucking a very gross like plot. And I think in this day and age, the way sexual politics have shifted over the last 5 to 10 years, I don't think this movie would even be made today. But when it came out, it was a big fucking deal. It won Best Picture, so I think so. I'm going to say I'm correct on that. I remember when I saw it in the theater, I was like, this is going to win Best Picture. And I remember, like, at least to my memory, it did. I was right. And, you know, despite its plot, which even back then, it's not like fucking having sex with your daughter's high school friend back then was okay. Even then, it was like a bit of a stretch, but it's just so well done. And it's about way more things than that. And it's just entertaining that you could kind of overlook the fact that the surface plot is like kind of insane. And I think it has a good message, which at the time, you know, I had this anti-homophobe message in it, which at the time was extremely relevant. I'd say it still probably has some relevance today, but, you know, today we have gay marriage. You know what I mean?
So, right. Right.
I would say things probably have gotten better on that front, but, you know, back then its message maybe felt a little more daring in that respect. But it's a movie I haven't seen in a long time, so I don't know if I'd still would love it as much, but at least in my memory, that's like a towering film from the 90s. Were you ever like, were you into that movie or?
It's one that I've always been like, I should like this one. I am a giant film fan, but it's, I don't know. Maybe it is the whole context of it being like a creepy kind of
thing.
And now just kind of even like now, certainly looking back and, you know, knowing, what Kevin Spacey's accused of, and
that makes it, there's like an extra layer of
creepy. Yeah, it adds, so it's like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to kind of like fully appreciate the movie.
And it's funny too, when I put on my list, I didn't even think about the fact that Kevin Spacey was in it, but right as I was talking, sure. I was like, Kevin Spacey, who will live in infamy? Like, that guy.
Yeah, him.
Anyways, what is your number six, Chris?
My number six is Kevin Smith's first film, Clerks. Mm.
Preach.
Yeah, this is. It's funny. I did not come to Clerks right away. It took probably maybe until 1997 for me to see it. A friend of mine actually showed it to us. We were away on like a shore vacation or something, and he popped it in, and instantly I was like captured by it. It hit everything that, like, you know, I worked in retail. It kind of hit those notes of like
the dumb customer.
You know, the dumb customer, the fact that like I didn't fucking want to be there. Like,
yeah.
And it was relevant to a lot of like what my friends and I were going through. It kind of captured that conversational piece of, hey, this is how people, like, this is how kind of like, you know, talk to each other.
Nerds talking about Star Wars. That was first.
It's like, it was just, you know, like, all right, yes, it's a little bit blown out, but like a lot of the same conversation points and stuff had come up like with friends, with girlfriends. And it hit the right note. And I can't say at the time that I was like, yeah, you know, black and white's really cool. But like, I was like, yes, this fucking movie is, this hits it. And I have been a Kevin Smith fan ever since. So
if there is a filmmaker that I think represents our generation, for me personally, more than Linklater, more than Tarantino, it's Kevin Smith, dude. Like, I'm like you. Ever since I saw Clerks, I was a fan. I saw it right when it came out, though. Like, I saw it as soon as it came out on video. I rented it, and within like a half hour, I was just like, this is the funniest fucking movie I've ever seen. I was dying. Like, I wasn't even thinking about how poorly it was made, because it is. I mean, you watch it now, that movie's rough as fuck. But like the writing was so good in it that I didn't even think about it. Like, I was just totally entertained by what was happening. Like, by the time we're getting to 36 Dicks, like, I'm 100% sold on that fucking movie. And I still think, like, I kind of went through his filmography again recently, and it's like, it's up there still for me, like, as one of his favorites. And obviously, as like, this movie that I think defines an era. And it kind of changed, like, that and Pulp Fiction changed 90s film and made indie, like, a viable thing, you know?
Yeah.
Brought the Weinsteins in the pot. But, yeah, I love Clerks.
I mean, looking at Kevin Smith, and I mean, I could have sat down and picked maybe any of his 90s movies.
That's just the one, though, you know? Yeah.
It's. I think it's the right one, even though I love the other three movies that he released in the 90s, but it kind of encapsulates everything that he did at that time.
That was your number five?
Yes.
Okay. My number five is Good Will Hunting. A movie that I thought was great when I saw it in, what was it, 98 that came out? I'm usually really good. 97. I thought it was great when I saw it back then. I watched it a couple months ago. I think, like, every time I watch Good Will Hunting, I like it more.
Nice.
One, I think it's one of Robin Williams' very best performances. Just a really cool, like, movie about friendship and about, like, just real life shit, kind of. Like, you know, dealing with bad things that have happened, dealing with loss, dealing with, you know, who are you going to be in life? You know, you have a main character who's capable of great things, but thinks he should be, like, he would be like a traitor to his friends if he went after those things.
Right.
Just a really fucking smart script by Damon and Affleck. And it's like, I remember last time I watched it, I was like, I know that they were two guys hungry and just trying to make it in Hollywood when they wrote that, but it's like, I thought they would keep writing scripts together and making movies and shit. And it's just like, that's it. I know that they're doing a movie again together, I think I heard.
I heard that as well.
But yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily written by them or whatever. Like, but just, it's fantastic. It's kind of impressive that it was written by guys so young. I don't think I could I still probably couldn't write anything close to that. And yeah, just kind of those things and just Robin Williams just really elevating it on top of that. And a really good score. There's a lot, I think, to like about Good Will Hunting. I know people could kind of make fun of it in a way, but like just because like some of the scenes are so iconic. I mean, Kevin Smith would go on and make fun of it. But I think the film itself is still really great.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. It's actually, funny enough, it is the movie that my wife and I went to our first date on.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so...
It's funny, because no, go ahead.
It holds, like, a special place.
Yeah, on top of it, yeah. And it's kind of a romantic movie at parts, sort of. Well, there's a relationship that happens in it.
Yeah.
So there's that. It's funny, I do remember seeing it in the theater. I cannot remember who I saw it with. I know it was some girl, but I just can't remember. What was your number four?
Number four is another movie that I believe Kevin Spacey is in this as well. Seven, David Fincher.
Uh-huh.
It's a kind of like a noir crime thriller with Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman going through chasing down this serial killer that so using the seven deadly sins as his kind of calling card. And I think it's it maybe borders on horror at times, certainly with some of the imagery. But I think that ending is, it's just great cinema, with Brad Pitt standing there and screaming at Spacey to know what the fuck is in
there. That was one of the most upsetting endings ever, dude.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, back then when the first time you saw it, like, God, was that upsetting. It is, 'cause like, it's a movie where the bad guy wins. Kind of, you know?
Like, yeah, he gets what he wants.
He gets killed, but that's his plan.
Yeah, know? Like, the entire, like, that's exactly why he did what, why he did what he did, was for it to end that way. And it is still a disturbing film kind of to watch, but I think it still really works too as a kind of like a dark crime thriller. So
yeah, I loved that movie back then. I think there are things about it that scream the 90s now, but even that said, I think it's still a really good, well-directed film by David Fincher. Yeah. Like, you know, even it, there's some things that's like, oh, we're trying to be edgy. Like the fucking, he made me fuck her with the fucking, whatever the fuck, that giant dildo, whatever the fuck. Like, you know, there's things where it, like, yeah, it's trying to be super edgy and over the top, but like, kind of earns some of that stuff too. And just fantastic ending. Let's see here, Chris. My number four is True Romance.
Okay.
Which is directed by Tony Scott. And it was Tarantino's first film, like, script. He wrote it and came out in 93. I always kind of jokingly say that this is, like, my favorite Tarantino movie. Not directed by him, but you could see in that script everything, like, it had like the kernel of everything that he would go on to do. And the movie's just kind of insane. And it's kind of like this fantasy for nerds. Like, it's about this nerdy fucking guy who meets this beautiful girl and runs away with her and tries to make a bunch of money. You have Christian Slater popping up twice in my top 10. He's awesome in this. Patricia Arquette, I love her in this. And this cast, you seen True Romance?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, this fucking cast is a who's fucking who of 1993. Everybody in this fucking bitch. I'm just going like through the Wikipedia entry. Rappaport, Bronson Pinchot, yep. I don't know how you say it. Dennis Hopper, Val Kilmer, Gary Oldman, Christopher Walken, Brad Pitt, James Gandolfini. Like, that is one of the most insane fucking casts I've ever heard. Like, especially, like, you know, some of these people, Gandolfini was nobody at that point, but God, is he's riveting in it. And, you know, you watch it now and you're just like, God damn, this guy went on to be, you know, one of the best actors of all time. And he's like, kind of like a bit part. It has, like, there's just scenes, just like any Tarantino, like, film. There's like moments and scenes that are just fucking iconic and crazy. I love the scene between Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken, where he explains to this mob boss played by Walken that that, you know, Italians are half black or whatever. It's just like, it's just a fucking wonderful fucking scene. It's just this movie is just a fun fucking movie, just like packed to the gills with fucking cool like cast choices and shit. Like, just cool people to see. Like, another every 5 minutes someone new is popping up that's like an awesome actor. You're just like, this is fucking amazing. Yeah, it's one of those movies. It's funny because I saw True Romance when it came out, like right when it came out, and I was like too little or something. And I was just like, I didn't really care for it that much. But it's absolutely one of my favorite Tarantino films now, even though he didn't direct it.
And I do look at it, and like, I like Tarantino, like, go to see everything that he does. But I do wonder if, you know, Tarantino sometimes doesn't seem to know how to pull himself back and contain himself.
Yeah.
I do wonder if maybe Tony Scott directing here, based on, you know, Tarantino's script, if he was able to kind of pull that in and make it
a better
directed movie than Tarantino's kind of all over the place sometimes. And it often works, but there's also like, hey, maybe this film didn't need to be 3 hours long.
I was just looking up the running time right now. I remember it being like a cool 90 minutes. It's almost 2 hours, but it feels real fast. This is like you're in and out almost with this movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is under 2 hours, which is kind of rare for Tarantino.
Nice.
Yeah, I fucking love True Romance, dude. I fucking will watch that any day of the week. Now, here we go. We're getting to the top three, Chris.
Well,
for you, it's just three more.
Mine are three more to rank. Number three here, I have a huge love for space, and Ron Howard's Apollo 13 was a movie that just it grabbed me, kind of the same way JFK did. Same sort of, you know, it's a biopic in a way. It's telling of these true events. And I think the story of like what the fuck happened, how the astronauts, you know, held their cool and were able to get themselves back, and how the people on the ground all did it. It's a wonderful story. You kind of think, hey, telling a story about these dudes just get shot off into space, maybe not, wouldn't hold your attention, but Howard does a great job here. He's often kind of just referred to as kind of like a guy that just gets it done.
Journeyman, yeah.
Yeah, and I often agree with that, but I think that Apollo 13 is probably his best film, and it's... I am not a Tom Hanks fan. We've gone over that. But I even enjoy him here.
You're not a Tom Hanks fan?
No, I don't like Tom Hanks. I'm sure we have discussed this before.
I feel like I would have remembered that.
Yes, I don't. I am not a... something about the guy just rubs me the wrong way.
What?
Yeah.
So, like... we'll have to have this discussion one day, but like that's crazy.
I mean, I can watch movies that he is in.
Like he's not like I'm not like, oh yeah, Tom Hanks, but like I definitely like him, you know. That's crazy. What a revelation here tonight.
There we go.
My number three is a film that you mentioned earlier, and that is Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Okay.
I think too much has to be said about it. It's a perfect action film. It is impressive even today.
Yeah.
It's barely aged. The liquid metal effects kind of look old. Like, they kind of look like early CG, but they still
hold up pretty passable. Well.
Yeah. Because it's liquid metal, too. So, like, what does that even look like? Like, that's not a real thing. So,
right.
Whatever. Look, my favorite, and this I have been on record, I know many times, is the original. Like, I like the more indie horror edge of the first one. Like, it's just grittier.
Yeah.
But this, I mean, if you want an action film, Terminator 2 is a perfect action film. And if you are thinking about the best movies of the 90s, it's kind of an undeniable... one of the best films of the 90s and one of the most important films of the 90s. It kind of changed summer movie making all over again. It made sequels the thing. It's funny, like, people don't remember that like sequels could be as good, if not better, than the original and a bigger hit than the original. But yeah, just all that stuff aside, it's just fucking fantastic. Like, there's a reason it gets released in every fucking format every time a new format comes out, and I actually picked this one up on 4K.
It's such a good movie. As we're talking about with True Lies, like, the James Cameron set pieces are wonderful to watch. I love that motorcycle
through the
river type thing, the
canal, or
yeah.
That's one of the greatest action scenes of all time.
Yeah, and then like the standoff outside Cyberdyne, and
yeah, everything. I've watched this film recently. It's just perfect. I don't know what to say about that hasn't been said. So we'll move on.
All right.
What's your number two, Chris?
My number two here is the Wachowski sisters.
The Wachowskis.
Yeah.
They're both sisters?
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Wikipedia actually still has The Matrix, which I'm going to talk about, as the Wachowski brothers. But they are now Lana and Lily. They both transitioned, but I think like as a movie that encapsulates kind of everything that I like about science fiction and crazy geek culture and comic books and video games and animation, The Matrix kind of hits every single note. It's all like I think it's a little goofy maybe to go back and watch it, but there are still some amazing scenes in that film. The shootout in the lobby, I think, is probably still one of the best action scenes ever filmed. And it did kind of usher in an era of nonsense with bullet time, and that became way overused over the years. But I think as an individual film, sit down and watch. I like everything about this. I love the style. I love the kind of cyberpunk aspect to it. Everything about The Matrix kind of hits the right notes for me.
It's not one of my favorite movies of the 90s, but it is, I think, an almost perfect movie too. Like, you know, I can appreciate it without it being like my favorite thing ever. And I remember when I first saw it, like, I really did dig it. And I really fucking wish that was it. Like, I wish that's all there ever was just The Matrix, like part one. I didn't need anything more. That ending is all I needed to know.
Yeah, you don't really
need the code. He cracked the code. He figured it out. He's going to kick some ass. Like, that's all I fucking needed to know.
And
they didn't need two terrible sequels. Like, well, varying quality sequels.
Yeah, I actually think Reloaded is pretty fucking good.
I didn't need it, though.
Yeah, it's not a necessary one. And because it, like, it has to flow into Revolutions, which is a terrible film.
And that's the last one, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so. Like Reloaded works as its own thing, but it stops halfway through, and then Revolutions is so bad that it kind of spoils both of them. And if you had just left it as The Matrix, I think it would have worked so much better.
Yeah, I was perfectly fine with just that one, and I would almost love the first. Like, it's nothing against the first one; like, I can't control that. But like,
yeah,
I would just almost love it better if like that was it, and you could always just wonder what if they made a part two. Speaking of twos, my number two is A Simple Plan from 1998, directed by Sam Raimi, based on the book by Scott Smith. This is, I mean, you've probably heard me say this before. This is like one of my favorite thrillers ever. Mm-hmm. I fucking love A Simple Plan. If I were doing it, a top 10 of my favorite films of all time, A Simple Plan would be on it. It's a very simple story. Three guys are off dicking around in the woods in the middle of winter, and they find a fucking crashed plane. And inside that plane is $4 million. And they come up with a very simple plan. They're going to hang on to the money for 6 months. No one comes looking for it. And it seems like everything's in the clear. They split the money evenly and go their separate ways. And, of course, like a lot of simple plans, shit goes really bad. And, you know, like there's a lot of things in life, once money becomes an issue, like
more problems.
It reveals your true natures, and you know, in a way.
Yep.
You've seen A Simple Plan, right?
I have. It's an excellent movie.
Yeah. Like, I think most people that see it like it, but I, for whatever reason, like, love this thing with my soul and my core. I think it's just, I think it is Bill Paxton's best performance, late Bill Paxton. Rest in peace. It also sucks that he's dead. I think it's Billy Bob Thornton's best performance by a fucking mile. It's just heartbreaking. Both of their character arcs in this film are just heartbreaking. I also really like the third friend, who is played by Brent Briscoe, who sadly died last year as well. he's really good in it. Bridget Fonda as like the wife who just suddenly becomes super evil is great in it. And it kind of goes how you could imagine, you know, like start turning it on each other and shit goes really, really bad. It's just my type of story. I just love it. It's like the type, one of those things I wish I had written it. So yeah, that's why that's my number two.
Nice.
And that brings us to the end here, I think.
Yeah. One left a piece. My number one here. Also, I mean, should note, not ranked on my end, but, another 1999 movie, Pixar's Toy Story 2. I guess another Tom Hanks starring movie, but I've always been a Buzz fan anyway. I really like how Pixar built off of what they built with the original Toy Story. I think this is their first sequel that they ever did, and they just reached even further with it and hit every mark they needed to. Told a great story. It's this one kind of builds off of where Woody was kind of in the first one, where he was kind of like, shit, Buzz is moving in on my territory. This one, he feels like he's kind of been passed by, and Buzz and the gang have to go and rescue him from a shady like toy dealer or something. And you end up learning about like who Buzz's father is, and it's all really well done. There's some crazy hijinks, super well animated. I think it's one of Pixar's best to date still. So
it is my favorite Toy Story movie, I can tell you that much.
It is mine as well. I mean, I like 3, but I think 2 does so much better.
I think they're all pretty good.
Yeah.
I think they're all basically the same old, but I just think 2 has the best pacing, has the best action.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's a good pick. Mine's a little different. And I'll say this too. It's another one that if I did one of my top 10 of all time is absolutely in the top 5 probably. So it's crazy. 2 films from the 90s would definitely be in my top 10. And you know, so my number one is Boogie Nights from 1997, written, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. It's him doing his best like Scorsese / Tarantino impression. And you know, but also finding his own voice too here. And but telling a story about the porn industry, like kind of like its transition from probably the height of the porn industry in the 70s to what it became in the 80s, going from a theater type thing into home video, where in a way I would imagine that's when porn really exploded, because I don't know how people in the 70s and prior to that went to theaters to watch porn. I would never in my life want to do that. It sounds awful. Anyways, that's a total side note, but
it's a good point though.
Yes. I don't know how people did that, but this movie, like, you know, and at surface, you know, people might think, oh, you like it because it's a, you know, there's sex in it, and then it's like super R-rated. Was it NC-17 or R? I think it was just R. And think it's just about like porn industry, or it's just like a goofy movie, or has nothing to say. But I think it has stuff to say about the porn industry, and at its core is about broken people who find each other as a second family. You know, it's about a kid who runs away from home, really, and basically finds a family at work, but his work is porn, and all the messy, complicated things that could come with that as well. and just, you know, cocaine, whatever, the porn industry, what it went through. And just this movie, like, Paul Thomas Anderson directs the hell out of this fucking movie. It's just kinetic. It feels alive. It feels like the best of Scorsese, like Goodfellas. Fantastic soundtrack from front to back. Awesome cast. Amazing performances. Memorable moments. Like, it's just, I think, a truly fucking great film. Like, I don't think it quite gets the respect it deserves because of the fact that there's, like, so much sex in it. But, like, that's not the thing that makes it great, I don't think. I think it's just a great movie because of what it's about and how well it's made. And it also has that fantastic fucking scene where they're doing a drug deal and they're selling fake drugs and they're afraid about getting killed. And meanwhile, the whole time there's this kid just walking around throwing firecrackers. It's just so much fun. Are you a fan of Boogie Nights, Chris?
I like Boogie Nights. I hear that the star of the movie is not a fan of Boogie Nights. So.
Yeah, you saw that too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Notice how I didn't really talk about Wahlberg there?
Yeah.
Fuck him. Like, what the fuck is that? That's the best movie you ever made, you fucking idiot. You fucking Jamook. Making fucking, like, every dumb fucking Peter Berg action movie now. And you're gonna shit on fucking Boogie Nights? Go fuck yourself. And I think I saw his reasoning with some bullshit about how he's fucking religious or something.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Maybe he's found God now or something.
Yeah, yeah, you know, make up for, like, when he did all sorts of fucked up shit when he was younger. Whatever, yeah, fuck him, but Boogie Nights is great. I could get over it. Some of the other people in this are, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman, William H. Macy's great in it. John C. Reilly's super great in it as his like, sidekick. Julianne Moore's great in it. Even fucking Burt Reynolds, who is also another dick, is fucking great in it. Anyways, go ahead.
No, it's a movie that kind of... I think it works because, you know, it is about the porn industry and it is about that change. And it's kind of this timeless film, though, where captures a piece of, you know, it captures that time in history.
Yeah.
And the excess of it. And I'd love to see kind of another type of movie like that, that transitions from, you know, video home recording to internet and see
how
they handle that.
Yeah. I mean, that's an industry that's gone through some, I mean, the whole entertainment industry has gone through changes, but, like, you know, there's an extra layer of intrigue to the whole, you know, porn thing. Anyways, yeah, I mean, that would definitely be up there for me. And of greatest all time, both of my last two, but, any of these, I think, on both of our lists, if you haven't seen them, I, like, definite recommends.
Yeah.
I can't think of a movie we mentioned tonight that I would rate less than 4. I think I would rate most of them 5 stars. Did you have any honorable mentions that, like, didn't make your list that you wanted to list off here?
I mean, you could sit there, as you said, like, you came up with a list of 30. And we kind of mentioned a couple of the ones that I would touch on. Terminator 2 obviously made your list. It's definitely deserving of being on that list. Empire Records, you mentioned earlier as well. That's one that just, when I was looking through films of the 90s, just, like, did not pop up on anything that I was looking. It. And so it did not make my list. And I'm sure, like, you know, Silence of the Lambs, we didn't really talk about. And there's a ton of awesome films. Mission Impossible, really from, you know, we've been talking about Mission Impossible for the last couple weeks. The original Mission Impossible, I think, was 1996. There's just a ton of awesome movies from the 90s. So what did you have as a...
These aren't all of mine, but these were, like, in my short list, and it's still a pretty long list. Election, Falling Down, American History X, Boys Don't Cry, Kids, Magnolia, Unforgiven.
Magnolia is one I was looking through. I was like, oh, that'll end up on Jeff's list. Like,
yeah, thought about it. I mean, if it's between Magnolia and Boogie Nights, it's Boogie Nights. Unforgiven, Chasing Amy, Clerks, Blair Witch Project.
I was surprised that that one was not on.
I know, it's such a big one for me. That one hurt. That one really hurt. But it's like, I do think the last time I watched it, which was about a year ago, it finally started to wear off on me, where I'm just like, this thing's rough. Anyways, Fargo, Heat, Seven, The Sixth Sense, Titanic, Pulp Fiction, The Shawshank Redemption, which I'm surprised didn't make it onto either of our lists.
Yeah.
Candyman and Goodfellas. So those are some of the other ones that, man, they hurt to cut, but at least I get to list them off there. Yeah.
I mean, as we kind of said at the start of this, like, the 90s had some fucking awesome movies. Like, yeah. It really did. It's often overlooked because of the 80s.
Yeah.
Maybe time just hasn't passed enough for people to kind of appreciate what came out of the 90s yet.
I think we are reaching that moment right now. I think that's, yeah. Like, it's been kicking around in my head lately, and I've kind of heard, you know, I've listened, you know, listened to a bunch of other podcasts. It seems like there's a growing appreciation for how good the 90s were. But the thing is, like, I also want to go back and check out some of the trash.
So, oh, yeah.
Just a growing appreciation for the 90s in general, and to just, you know, go back and look at some of that stuff again with new eyes, you know, 20 years later. I think we are just reaching that point, and it's kind of fun to see, like, what sticks out to us right now.
It's one of the reasons why I like staying current with things, because then you can kind of, you don't live in the past.
Yeah.
And so when those trends come around again and people are like, the 90s were really fucking good, you can be like, yeah, they fucking were. Like, but you can also, like, hey, we lived through that shit, but we also are able to go back and look at it with fresh eyes of having, you know, 30 years of film watching experience since then. So,
yeah. Well, maybe I always like to do these list episodes, and we have not done a ton of, like, our special type episodes lately. Maybe we'll do one again next week, because honestly, I don't know what I have for next week.
I will maybe see the weird Melissa McCarthy Muppets movie.
Yeah, I've heard really bad things.
Yeah,
I mean, I could see it for free.
Yeah, that's kind of like, I'm like, hey, that's like, get my money's worth out of that.
It's like, yeah, there's that, but also, like, in concept, like, it's a movie I would want to see, but I've just heard, like, I haven't seen anyone say they liked it. I'll say that much. So
that's a shame, because I did think the trailer was a little outlandish, but the idea of, like, dirty Muppets, like,
it's possible that it's, like, just one of those ones that most critics turn their nose up at. Like, it's very possible that happens sometimes.
Yeah,
but go ahead. You tell. You go and you tell me.
I will go see it. I mean, I don't have anything else going on tomorrow afternoon. And I'm kind of upset that Searching is only playing in, like, four theaters or something like that this week, because that actually looks interesting.
Yeah. I checked to see if it was near me, and nowhere.
Yeah.
That does look cool. That one actually probably will be pretty good. But, yeah, I don't know what our special episode would be if we did one next week, but it's possible, just saying. But I hope you enjoyed listening to us look back at the 90s a little bit here. So thanks for listening.
Movie dudes. Do-do-do-do-do.